Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast. I am your host, as always, Jesse Collings, and I am doing a solo show today. Still working on some guests for the summer, but we'll have a couple more guest episodes coming up in the future. But for now, you just have me. I know there's a huge demand for people to just hear my voice talking about professional wrestling, and I'm here to satisfy that demand. So I have a number of topics we're going to talk about today, just kind of touching a bunch of different kind of cornerstones of current events and just general thoughts. I wanted to start with a story that came out yesterday. I'm recording this just after 2 p.m. on Friday afternoon, and that is regarding WWE doing a partnership with Sirius Radio to basically take over Sirius's 24-hour wrestling radio station. Now, this is something that I believe Sirius launched last year. They kind of gave, essentially my impression is that they kind of gave Busted Open, which is by far the most well-known program on the station, basically its own 24-hour station where they would add in some other stuff. Like I think Cheap Heat, Peter Rosberg's show went over there. A couple of other shows were there. But it was really just like, we're going to do 24 hours of wrestling talk. Now, of course, given shows like Busted Open and Cheap Heat, it was extremely WWE leaning. It was probably like 90% WWE and then like 10% AEW, or maybe like a little TNA if they felt like they wanted to talk about TNA, but it was mostly WWE anyway. But the news story is basically that WWE now has this agreement and they're moving some of their podcasts, things like Stephanie McMahon's crappy podcast or Sam Roberts' crappy podcast or The Undertaker's crappy podcast, over to that station. So what does that really mean? I think it honestly, like, the interesting aspect to it is basically like, okay, WWE is now partnering directly with another media source, in this case Sirius Radio, to control an aspect of wrestling media. We've seen WWE do this before, right? They have the agreement with The Ringer, which might have expired, because I think some of those shows, like the Sam Roberts podcast, maybe not the Sam Roberts one, but some of those shows were part of the Ringer podcasting network as like WWE affiliated shows. I know Corey Graves' show was on the Ringer. And now those are going to the WWE Sirius agreement. So maybe that Ringer relationship is over. I know they don't really cover wrestling all that much outside of the Masked Man show these days. But we saw them get the deal with The Ringer. We saw them sign a deal with Front Office Sports. So we've seen WWE make these agreements with media companies before to basically make it all about them, right? You guys were covering wrestling. Well, now you're going to cover, you're going to be partnering with WWE and you're just going to be covering us. And to be fair, most of these outlets already, like the Sirius station, were already really heavily WWE covering. Like if you cared about non-WWE wrestling, you probably weren't listening to or reading or doing any of these outlets before. So in that sense, there's not a huge change, but there is the fundamental aspect of now WWE is a corporate partner with these media outlets. Like my personal opinion, like I would be really upset if I, as an independent journalist, was working for a company that had a agreement with the main subject that we are covering. Like it would be like I cover public schools professionally, and if the public school district bought my news outlet and then I was covering for the public school, like I'm just doing PR for the public school, I'm not really covering anything. That's kind of what this feels like. I think like a lot of the people who are working like for the Sirius radio station or are covering stuff for Front Office Sports, like I assume these people are kind of like untrained nitwits that don't really care about things like, oh, I think it's actually questionable that my company is now partnership with the main subject matter that we are supposed to be covering objectively. I think a lot of these people are like, oh, sweet, now I get to basically work for WWE, which is a dream come true, and they can interview Cody Rhodes on whatever show they have, and it's great for them. So I don't think they're thinking that hard about it, but that's the aspect of it that I think deserves the most attention. But I know they talked a lot about that on the flagship podcast that aired last night. So I'm going to jump in a different direction a little bit and talk about all these media companies think that they can cover WWE and cover pro wrestling and that there's like something to be gained from that. We've seen it. We saw, like I mentioned, The Ringer already. We've seen ESPN try it. We've seen Sports Illustrated try it. We've seen, and now we're seeing Sirius Radio try it. Yahoo has tried it with Ariel Helwani and his vertical that covers pro wrestling. Like these mainstream outlets think, you know what, there's an audience here. We should be producing some coverage for it because, pro wrestling, especially WWE, if you look at its television ratings, you look at its live attendance, is definitely, you look at that and you say, wow, there's an audience that's definitely big enough to justify some coverage because there's obviously fans. Just like that are into it, just like there are fans of the NBA and the NHL and MLB and NFL and any other sports league you want to cover. There's obviously, based on the kind of attendance data and television ratings that we have access to, there's a big enough audience to kind of justify some coverage. But what happens is none of these things ever gain any traction and they usually give up. Like The Ringer has basically given up. Sports Illustrated kind of basically gave up. I know that has more to do with Sports Illustrated's corporate model, but they basically gave up. Nobody cares about this Ariel Helwani vertical. The only time I ever hear anyone even talk about any coverage is when the flagship is clowning on their awards and things like that that are so obvious WWE slanted. No one talks about CBS Sports wrestling coverage. No one talks about ESPN's wrestling coverage. Like nobody cares about all this stuff. So, despite the fact that there should be an audience for this, there isn't. And why is that? And I think a big reason is that none of this coverage is interesting at all. It's usually just very generic, very tepid criticism, if criticism at all, towards WWE, with very little analysis really sinking into it. I talked about this before when I said basically there's so many people that are pretending to talk about wrestling, but none of them know how to talk ball. None of them know how to really analyze storylines, analyze company momentum, diagnose, if a wrestler's losing momentum, if a wrestler's gaining momentum, if something is actually good in connecting with the audience, if something is actually bad in connecting with the audience. A lot of these people just, I don't know if it's they haven't watched enough wrestling, they don't think about it enough, they don't have the cerebral approach, they're not good enough communicators for that. I don't know what exactly is the problem, but that's clearly a major issue with, I think, a lot of mainstream pro wrestling analysis that you do see. And I think the result is their product is boring, in while there may be wrestling fans out there that would be interested in hearing this analysis, it's not appealing to them because it's boring and because it doesn't really offer any insight or critical attitude. And so I'll be interested, like, I don't see, like, Sirius Radio, like, who is listening to Busted Open Radio 24/7? Who's tuning in at 3 a.m. And like wants to listen to some wrestling discussion? I mean, they're obviously, they think that there's an audience for that. I think that's such a small audience that it doesn't really matter. Like, it busted open, sure, but like everything else on that network that's airing, like, at in the middle of the night, or even like, oh, I'm gonna do my evening commute home, I'm gonna turn on, the WWE 24/7 channel so I can listen to somebody talk about Raw from 2 days ago. Like, what even is that? And like, honestly, like, I personally am such a different type of wrestling fan than kind of, I think, what these people are catering towards. Like, how can you talk about WWE that much? Like, I know they have a lot of content that they fill up each week, but how can you justify so much coverage exclusively for WWE without touching on, maybe a little AEW, but not touching on like anything in Mexico, anything in Japan, anything on the Indies, just like anything else interesting that's happening in pro wrestling? How can you talk about WWE that much, especially in this day and age where all of X booking is so glacially slow that, like, yeah, there's 10 hours of WWE content coming out across all their different platforms each week, but almost very little of it is storyline progression. Like, there's not that much new stuff to talk about over the course of that week. So I think that's maybe part of it, is just like it's really boring to discuss. And the other aspect of it is that I think that a lot of wrestling fans, I think a lot of WWE fans are either, they don't really care about like following the product through a podcast or reading coverage of a raw review, written review, or something like that after the product is over. I think they maybe tune in and then they, once it's over, they move on with their lives and they don't really think that much about, there's not that much of an appetite for like post-show stuff. And the other aspect of it that might be hindering this coverage from being successful is that a lot of these mainstream outlets are super late to the game and that people have already found their spots, whether it's in more pro wrestling focused podcasts. There's a million of those out there. I have one myself. You're listening to one right now. Or they have their own Discord channels that they talk about it in, or they follow these social media accounts, or these YouTube accounts that they like watching reviews on. They've already kind of found their niche, their hole, their space to talk about wrestling, and they're not really interested in like going onto CBSSports.com and reading a review because they've already been for years had this other spot that they're trying to find. So I think that is all stuff that goes into play when we talk about like why none of this stuff sticks. I think it's, and generally I think it's boring content first. I think that there isn't really any cool analysis to be done if you're just going to be like very minorly critical of WWE. And so there's not a lot of wiggle room if you just think everything is good or you think everything is at least passable. And I also think that these outlets are just late to the game, so they're not ready to cover. I think the, if you are a mainstream news outlet and you are like thinking about, we got to cover pro wrestling, the first thing I would say is don't get in bed with WWE, as enticing as that might be, because you'll get exclusive interviews and those will probably help you with like game the SEO algorithm and things like that. If you could put Cody Rhodes interview on your website. But you have to actually offer something either new or different or at least interesting. Like you have to have interesting personalities on to discuss it. And I'm not talking about personalities like Peter Rosenberg or Ariel Helwani. I'm talking about people that can actually analyze pro wrestling and actually give real honest opinions and do it in a way that's entertaining to the audience. I think you're never gonna be chasing that new audience with just like a bland, boring product. It has to stand out and be different because you're trying to break into a space that's already heavily saturated with a bunch of amateur shows and podcasts and things like that. But that's basically that my take on that. It'll be interesting to see how long this lasts. Like if this is something that's going on in 2 or 3 years, or it's something that they kind of give up on. Sirius is adding a lot of kind of terrestrial radio programming to its broadcast network. I know a lot of sports stations, including WEEI here in Boston, are kind of going to a simulcast model where you can now get them on Sirius XM. So there's a lot happening. They're trying to expand their footprint. So this is probably ultimately a very small part of it, but it is interesting. You know, it's something that didn't really exist with Vince McMahon as much, but since Nick Khan has taken over, we're seeing a lot more of these, you know, media partnerships, which makes sense because, Nick Khan's background is in media partnerships and Ari Emanuel's background is in as an agent, and they know a lot of people and they can connect these things. And I'm sure they're very keen on, you know, getting this message out there that they're controlling aspects of the wrestling media. They've been definitely, I think, more aggressive on that model than they ever were under Vince McMahon. Sticking with WWE leadership, it's been trending this way for a while, but I think definitely the Saturday Night's Main Event with all the New York Knicks players and like that. And these recent stuff with Logan Paul and Tom Brady have really emphasized that this company is so reliant on celebrities. And they want to have as many of these celebrities as possible on their programming. They want to work them into matches. They want to work them into angles. They want to have them there just not doing anything. This isn't a novel concept. It's been going on in wrestling for years. And of course, Vince McMahon built the WWF back up in the 80s. Thanks to a lot of celebrity involvement. You can look at WrestleMania 1 and had was jam-packed with celebrities, probably most notably Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper. So it's not like a new playbook, but what I think we're seeing now is a reliance on celebrities as the solution to what is an otherwise pretty flat product, with the idea being that if ticket sales are slacking, if live attendance is down, television ratings are poor, if we feel like we need a shot in the arm for a big event like SummerSlam, the powers that control the company, which would be Ari Emanuel, Mark Shapiro, Nick Khan. I'll leave Paul Levesque out of it because I think that he's in a different boat. But the real heavy hitters in the company, the people that control that company, the TKO crowd, they really don't view wrestling and wrestlers as something that will interest people. They see celebrities as that. I don't think they see SummerSlam ticket sales slacking and think, we gotta do something. We gotta elevate a new star. We've gotta create a hot wrestling match with our existing wrestlers that will make it exciting. Maybe the booking's gotta be a little bit better. Something's gotta change to kind of put some juice into the show. They don't think about that like that. They think, we need more star power. Where are we going to get it? It's going to be from some celebrity that can give us attention. That's how they view things. They don't view Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, CM Punk as real stars. They view them as wrestlers that they have, but they don't view them as actual business moving stars that can attract attention to their product because they don't, fundamentally, they don't believe that pro wrestling is an inherently interesting thing that can create fan interest. That's why the solution for almost all these things are looking outside. Okay, we got to bring in Travis Scott. He'll shoot an angle with Cody Rhodes. Okay, Pat McAfee's got to get involved because, we think Pat McAfee could be the next Sylvester Stallone. He's a major celebrity. He's on ESPN every day. They see that as the solution. They don't think about it in wrestling terms. They think about how they can get eyeballs, and they view that through celebrities, which makes sense again because these are people that come from a talent agent background, and in their view, the individual celebrities are going to be people from outside wrestling, not these kind of closeted WWE superstars that have a limited appeal in their eyes. And I think it's really telling. Like, I think it was really easy to talk. We talk about this all the time when Vince McMahon was in charge of WWE. Like, Vince McMahon doesn't view them as a wrestling company. Vince McMahon sees them as entertainment, and they're not going to, it's not about wrestling. It's about storylines and about characters, and it's not about, bell-to-bell work or things like that. And all of that was very well true. But I think this new current regime really emphasizes that to such a dramatic degree that we have never seen before, in the sense that they really don't want to be a wrestling company. They really don't see wrestling as the main thing that brings people to the product. They are looking at celebrities. They're looking at things of anyone who, pretty much anyone who's famous outside of wrestling. They could be an athlete, they could be a musician, they could be a YouTube streamer, they could be just like anyone under the sun. But they view those people as big stars. They do not view wrestling. Even the biggest stars within WWE, they do not view them as stars. Which is why the solution to all of their problems is always, let's get some celebrities in here. Who's attracting buzz on the internet? Let's see if we can get them to do an appearance on Raw. Let's see them. These Saturday Night Main Event tickets sales suck. Let's try to bring in some New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden so they can draw the house because Roman Reigns can't. That's how they view things. And it's really frustrating, I guess. I don't care about WWE's product anymore because I'm not invested in it at all and I almost never watch it. But it is kind of concerning that the biggest wrestling company in the world really has a disdain for pro wrestling. It doesn't see pro wrestling as its main product. And I don't think it's going to work in the long run. I think the average wrestling fan doesn't really like or care about celebrities in pro wrestling. I always say this whenever they bring in a celebrity for attention, like the number of celebrities that had really obvious, cool, positive contributions into pro wrestling is really limited. Like, I think Mr. T had a great contribution to pro wrestling. He was a huge television star at the time. His angles with Roddy Piper were really big at the time, helped build up WrestleMania as a major event, helped WWF nationally expand. Like, he's a good example. Mike Tyson, huge, huge celebrity name, very kind of controversial newsline grabbing. Have him do a little program with with Steve Austin, right when Steve Austin's star was really about to, hit its peak. That was obviously a very good contribution. Those are two. There's probably a few more in there, but there's also for every Mike Tyson or Mr. T, there's like a million Jay Lenos or Travis Scotts, or these people that totally failed and meant nothing to pro wrestling. And I think the average wrestling fan wants to see wrestlers wrestle, And when they got back into WWE, when WWE was doing well a couple of years ago, it was largely wrestling and wrestling storylines that brought people back, whether it was Mercedes Moné, whether it was Sami Zayn in the Bloodline and Cody Rhodes chasing the title and Roman Reigns and all that stuff, CM Punk coming back, all of that was wrestling and storylines. And while like I would mock different aspects of like, oh, I hate these Shakespeare in the Park Roman Reigns matches, or oh, the storytelling's so obvious and stupid, while I particularly didn't like that stuff, there is no denying that at least it was focused on wrestlers and wrestling, and the storyline was about, winning the wrestling world championship away from Roman Reigns. Like, it was still very much a wrestling storyline. Instead, we're now focused on like celebrities and like Tom Brady gonna do an angle with Logan Paul, who himself is a celebrity that's just kind of shifted into being a full-time wrestler. It's all just a bunch of really concerning trends, and I hope it doesn't spill elsewhere, even though historically, when WWE starts doing something a lot, other wrestling companies start copying it. But to me, it's always been kind of it's really interesting to see how far they can push it before there's really significant fan backlash. I think we already saw it, kind of with WrestleMania, where you just had all these people like, oh, here's Jelly Roll, getting involved. And previous to that, obviously Travis Scott's involvement was really derided by fans. And like Pat McAfee, like the fans rejected Pat McAfee. The original plan at WrestleMania was like huge Pat McAfee heel run, where he was might have been like every episode of television might have been built around him. He might have won the world title. Like, that was their plan. Their plan was to really push Pat McAfee heavily. And the fans like pretty immediately rejected him. And Pat was like, yeah, I don't really think this is working, so I'm not going to do this. And I don't think he's been seen since. He's maybe done some commentary here and there, but they were like kind of going to build around him, the next Sylvester Stallone, and he decided to bail because they rejected it. So I don't know if this will reach a bigger breaking point than it already has. I think that a lot of fans are fed up with it, personally, but we'll see where that goes. Next up, I wanted to talk about staying with WWE, and SummerSlam in particular, but shifting more towards a broader wrestling discussion. So we have SummerSlam coming up, and the two main matches for SummerSlam are CM Punk versus Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins. Right? Those are the two matches for SummerSlam. It'd be funny if these are wrong, but I'm pretty sure those are right. And this is coming on the heels of WrestleMania's two biggest matches being Roman Reigns versus CM Punk and Cody Rhodes versus Randy Orton. So your two kind of signature events over the last few months, WrestleMania and SummerSlam, they're both two-night events, and they've been headlined by what I would call like heavily established talent. I don't think Seth Rollins is right around 40, but otherwise everyone else is over 40 in that picture. And they're all people that have been on television for at least 15 years, if not 20 years in some cases, like Randy Orton. And so if you look at those two things, and I think one of the criticisms of WrestleMania and the build up to it was like, wow, these guys are really old. They don't really have anything going on with the younger guys. Both world titles are kind of around old guys. This is boring. And then, so what did they do in between WrestleMania and SummerSlam? They did basically nothing. They didn't get any of those younger guys ready to go. And instead, we're running back SummerSlam with some pretty, there's not a lot of things that are going to change. Seth Rollins beats Roman Reigns, which he's almost definitely not going to do. Like, does that really change anything? Does if CM Punk beats, or Cody Rhodes beats CM Punk, will that change anything? Like, it feels like there's no real momentum or consequence. And that's what happens when you don't really prioritize elevating younger talent. And I think the emphasis here is on my personal theory. I can't prove it, but it's my theory. And more evidence gets added every day to it being true. These guys don't want to work with the younger guys. They don't want to work with Obafemi. They don't want to work with Bron Breakker. They don't want to work with Javon Evans. If you're Cody, CM Punk, or Roman Reigns, you don't want to work with those guys because there's no incentive for you to work with them. Because in the TKO era, they understand that if they get their replacement or a younger talent over, then their position is more vulnerable. Like if Roman Reigns worked a long program with Obafemi, or perhaps if he worked a long program with Walter, which I think they wanted to do, which is why they had Walter get this big push and retire John Cena, only for him to not really do anything subsequent to that. I think the idea was like, we want Walter to be a really top guy, and here's the big push. We got John Cena to do a job in his final career to him. But the reality is, if I'm Roman Reigns, I'm like, I don't want to train this guy and help get this guy get over. I don't want to work a long program with this guy. Even if I go over kind of in the end, I don't want to elevate this guy to the level that I'm at. Because if I choose to do that, then TKO is going to turn around and say, you know what, Roman, you're really expensive. You don't work a lot of dates. I don't think we really need you as much as we used to, because we've got this new guy, Walter, who can take your spot as the top heel in the company, or top tweener, whatever the fuck Roman Reigns is these days. And so if I'm Roman Reigns, I'm like, I'm not doing that because I've got a cushy gig. I'm probably the highest paid guy in the company. I work like 8 matches a year, if that. I'd never have to do jobs really that I don't want to do. I make a ton of money. I get a bunch of time off. I look like a god. I don't. Why would I want to give that up? Why would I want to get a cheaper replacement in to do my job? So there's no real motivation, I think, for Roman or CM Punk or Cody to elevate a guy underneath them. Seth at least has worked a program with Braun Breaker, which he won in the end. But at least I think Seth's a tier below those three. But those three older guys are the kind of key demo. So what we see them is we see them work with either each other, which is very safe. This is what the Clique did, right? The Clique wanted to control the main event scene because they didn't want anyone else getting into the high-priced talent slots on the roster. And it wasn't until people like Scott Hall and Kevin Nash left that names like Steve Austin and The Rock ended up kind of in those other high spots. But they either work with themselves or they work with like safe people that are established veterans that they kind of know are not going to replace them, right? Randy Orton is not going to replace Cody Rhodes, right? Sami Zayn is not going to replace CM Punk. Jey Uso is not going to replace Roman Reigns. So they work with these safe guys. You can throw in Drew McIntyre, you can throw in Kevin Owens, like these people who do work these programs with these top guys. Those guys are not going to replace them. You know who might replace them? Obafemi, Braun Breaker, Trick Williams. Those people don't get to work with those guys. Obafemi's kind of off in Brock Lesnar land, kind of removed from the situation, and I think it's very telling that Obafemi won the King of the Ring, which would put him in line for a title shot, which would have him presumably wrestle either CM Punk or Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, and instead all of a sudden he's like, actually I'm going to give up my title shot just so I could fight Brock Lesnar again, which is didn't make any sense from a storyline perspective, but does make sense if you think Roman Reigns was back there saying, I'm not working with this guy. And I don't know, maybe Levesque doesn't have the stroke to make him do it, but something's that eventually these guys are going to have to work with younger talent. I presume. Maybe they don't. Maybe this just exists forever, and eventually the younger talent that had potential just loses all the potential, and then they never get over and they lose that chance, which is a very real possibility, right? If Obafemi never gets really elevated, which he will have to work with at least one of those three guys to do, if he never does that, then he'll probably lose a lot of momentum, and he probably will eventually not be seen as a future top guy the way he is now. You can already kind of see that with Braun Breaker, right? Breaker's really, he worked one match with CM Punk, I think, which he lost earlier this year. I think it was like maybe the first Raw of the year or something like that. He lost the title challenge to CM Punk. Like, and he's already kind of not seen as the top future guy the way he was a couple years ago because he's never been elevated to that chance. And he's losing momentum. There's other reasons for that. He's been injured. He's in that terrible vision stable that has no interest in creative direction. But you can kind of see it that he's already kind of lost some momentum. And that's the same kind of thing that like a guy like Obafemi faces or a guy like Trick Williams faces if the fans start to realize these guys are never actually going to be elevated into the actual top spot. And so we're here at SummerSlam and we're not going to make any progress in that regard because we've got the geriatric main event scene. On the flip side, over in All Elite Wrestling, we have an established veteran champion in Kenny Omega, and he will be defending his title against Kevin Knight coming up this weekend. Show might have already happened by the time you're listening to this. And if you want to talk about the opposite of somebody getting a new guy ready, it's Kenny Omega because he's facing Kevin Knight at Redemption. And Kevin Knight is a example of a guy who's in his 20s. He's fresh. He has a bit overexposed on TV. AEW and kind of methodically pushing him up the card. And now he's getting his first world title match to main event at pay-per-view. And it's a huge opportunity for him. And I am do not think he's going to win this match. I'd be shocked if he did. That'd be crazy. But I can almost guarantee that Kenny Omega is going to give him a lot. He's already given him a lot in this relatively brief feud that they had. They've had Kevin Knight stand tall. They had a nice end to Dynamite on Wednesday with Kevin Knight laying out Kenny and Kenny doing a blade job and things like that. And so they're clearly, doing the thing that WWE won't do, or Kenny is doing the thing that WWE's top stars are not interested in doing, which is working with a guy who will eventually be put in a position to kind of replace Kenny Omega. Now, maybe it's because Kenny Omega is doing this because he understands what the business needs and that this is what, older wrestlers need to do to help younger wrestlers get along. Maybe Kenny Omega is doing it because he knows that Tony Khan will always have a spot for him in a way that TKO will not always have a spot for their current top guys, right? We've seen how TKO treats a lot of their guys once they realize that they're probably making too much money and not giving them enough value. They'll cut them and they'll replace them with someone else. Tony Khan won't do that necessarily. We haven't seen him do that. So maybe it's easy for Kenny Omega to put over his replacement than it is for Roman Reigns, because Roman Reigns is thinking maybe I'll be out of a job in a year if I do this. Well, Kenny Omega is not. And so Kenny is, and this is an example of an older established guy working with a younger established guy and helping elevate him, bring him up, put him on his level. By the end of Redemption, while I think Kenny Omega is going to stand tall, the goal is the viewer should be thinking, Kenny won that match, but Kevin Knight's really close, and probably, a year from now, maybe 18 months from now, he's going to be a world champion because everything is trending in the right direction. And if Redemption isn't a good example of that, you can just look at All In, which will be taking place at Wembley Stadium next month, and where Kenny Omega will be facing Will Ospreay, where he will almost definitely be doing the job and putting Will Ospreay over. And if Kevin Knight isn't a replacement for Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay 100% is a replacement for Kenny Omega in terms of being the top babyface, best bout machine kind of guy. You could argue that Will's already kind of assumed that mantle, but this will be a pretty formal passing of the torch for one, best in-ring wrestler of his generation to another. And establishing Will as, probably the top star in AEW in a lot of ways. And again, this is something that WWE has been really reluctant to do, I think to their own detriment, as the company was peaking a couple of years ago. They really failed to capitalize on that momentum by elevating new talent and instead relying on old talent. And really, like, CM Punk coming back to WWE gave them a few extra years of kind of interesting matchups, because where would they be if they didn't have CM Punk, in terms of him being at least a fresh act within the scope of contemporary WWE? Like, they're still working, like, they're still running on fumes with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns as an interesting feud. And Cody, of course, has been spinning his tires for about a year, hasn't done anything interesting. CM Punk's at least, giving them an extra 18 months along with the John Cena retirement, I think, of fresh content in terms of big stuff that fans care about. But that stuff, that's all waning now. But I think there's a lot of contrast between AEW and WWE. I feel like sometimes I do it too much, like comparing this is what AEW is doing and this is what WWE is doing, because they are separate wrestling companies. And certain things are going to work for AEW that don't really work in WWE, and vice versa. I think everyone understands that. But I think that this is a really interesting, especially when we look at the SummerSlam card and you look at kind of what's going on with the AEW world title compared to what's going on with the two WWE world titles. It's a good contrast to see, like, what company is looking progressive at how can we get younger, how can we get underexposed talent over and seen at the highest level, and what WWE is doing with that. We'll see what they do with Oba after he presumably beats Brock Lesnar. It's possible he loses. I do think Brock taught Obafemi a lesson at WrestleMania, so Brock does the job to Obafemi and then basically hogs the spotlight from him by taking off his gloves and pretending like, oh, I'm retired, ha ha ha. So everyone talks about Brock Lesnar after the match instead of Obafemi. And then, of course, Brock Lesnar gets his win back. So I think that was a political masterclass by one Brock Lesnar, a guy who's given out a lot of them over the years. And you would presume the progressive booking move would be for Obafemi to beat Brock Lesnar, but who knows? If Brock goes, I'm not putting this guy over for good. I'm not making him look better than me. He'll might take my spot. And I've got a cushy gig here. I've got the Roman Reigns gig. Or maybe Roman Reigns has the Brock Lesnar gig, where I get to work like 3 matches a year and make a ton of money and basically get booked like a god. Why would he give that up? So I never bought the Brock Lesnar retirement storyline anyway, or like the idea that Brock Lesnar was going to retire, which a lot of people somehow believed. Heading into SummerSlam. Oh, it's in Minnesota. That'll be Brock Lesnar's retirement. Why? Why would Brock Lesnar retire? He's not physically shot. He's not someone that's like, on his last legs. He doesn't have, unlike John Cena, who obviously has a very lucrative acting career, he doesn't really have like another way to make this kind of money. Why would he give that up? He's making a shit ton of money. He doesn't have to do a lot of work. Why would he stop doing that? Unless he was really physically shot, like he had to have neck surgery and his body was fucked up. And he still looks pretty good. I mean, yeah, I know he's older, but he doesn't look like he has to stop wrestling anytime soon. So why would he? So it'll be interesting to see, I guess, what happens there, because that's the one match you can kind of point to and be like, well, they did put Obafemi over Brock in a Hell in a Cell, so it did kind of, he's the one guy they're kind of elevating. And what happens next with Obafemi is, what program is he going to be in? Is he going to be in a holding pattern until maybe he wins the Rumble? If he works for WrestleMania, is he going to go over? Like, who knows? I mean, he's the guy that I think if you're a WWE fan, you'd be looking at as the next generation of star as it currently stands, but that can change pretty fast. But it'd be interesting to see where he goes next. Moving on, focusing more on AEW, but still a little touch of WWE here. We're going to hit this point soon where some of these guys who were released from WWE are going to be eligible to their 90-day no-compete is going to go up. And we're going to have, people like The New Day become available, or Sheamus, whose contract is expiring. I think his contract's actually expiring in November. But we have some older WWE talents that is going to become available. I think the Motor City Machine Guns, who were in WWE, I wouldn't really consider them like WWE talents because they've, mostly wrestled outside of WWE on like, The New Day or Sheamus, who, pretty much all of their mainstream careers have been in WWE. And we're going to be hitting a point where there's going to be continued discussion about, are these talents going to end up in AEW? And I think the presumption is yes, that the New Day is going to come in. And, there's been kind of a long-standing potential money feud with the Young Bucks, and there's stuff with same with the Motor City Machine Guns, right? You can come in and have them wrestle the Young Bucks because they have history. And it's just, I think the discussion when we talk about this, I think most people look at this and say, oh, I would be interested in seeing talent X outside of WWE getting to work in AEW. That's a pretty generally held belief. Because AEW gives wrestlers more creative freedom. They let people do stuff that WWE wouldn't let them do. They generally respect talent more. And by that, I mean both like in a booking perspective and in like respecting what they can do in the ring more than WWE does. So it's really tantalizing if you're a fan of almost anyone that has been working in WWE, unless you're like a total WWE weirdo who hates everything that's not WWE, you're probably going to be intrigued by, huh, I wonder what happens when they work outside of WWE in another, big, easily accessible promotion that has a lot of good talents that they could work with. And I think that's how people approach it. And I think, like, if you're talking about a talent like the New Day, you're like, yeah, it's like the New Day was an AEW, you can easily envision. Them and the Young Bucks doing a program, they'll probably be big. Or, them with some of the other tags in AEW. What if they had a program with, FTR or another program with FTR? Since they probably did, I can't recall exactly if they ever had a program with them in WWE, but I assume they must have. But, like, what if they worked with the FTR? What if they worked with Cope and Christian? What if they worked with Top Flight? Like, what if they worked with all these names? What if Brodito was facing, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods? Like, you could see it. It's all stuff that could happen. And, it's probably going to be pretty good. So all that stuff is how I think most people analyze, like, what's on the table for them. But what I think about it is, like, AEW is a huge roster. They have a lot of people that struggle to get TV time. Historically, the professional wrestling industry moves better when new, unproven names get television time, not established veterans with an obvious ceiling. And there's a cost, there's an opportunity cost that comes from bringing in a team like the New Day. Like that extends beyond just, oh, I think that they are good enough to be in AEW and they could do some interesting things. I think most people agree that those guys could do some interesting things in AEW. But if you sign the New Day and you're paying them X amount of dollars and you're, pushing them, giving them enough TV segments each week, is that coming at the expense of a younger act that may be able to get over? For example, Speedball, Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight, Jet Speed. I almost thought Speedball was the name of their tag team, but it's actually not. That's just Speedball Mike Bailey. But Jet Speed, right? Jet Speed was a tag team that worked a lot last year. They got a lot of TV time. They got some matches. I'm trying to think if they ever won the tag team championships. I think they might have. I'm so bad with remembering who won titles and things like that. But right, they got a lot of TV time. They got time to get over, and the result was Kevin Knight got, a chance to really perform on Dynamite each week, and gave him this little program with Mike Bailey after they broke up and helped elevate Kevin Knight. He went from a guy that just kind of been signed from New Japan, had been, a junior heavyweight in New Japan, and moved him to AEW, and now he really feels like a potential future big star in the company. And that started because he was given some opportunity to wrestle on TV. And if the New Day were in WWE last year, would Jet Speed have gotten the same kind of amount of television time, the same kind of matches, the same kind of exposure, the same kind of opportunities that they did get? Obviously, this is all hypothetical, but it's possible they didn't because they got a pretty substantial role on television. And if the New Day are coming in, then they could potentially get a substantial role on television as well. And so if you bring in a team like the New Day, you're potentially blocking the next Kevin Knight from getting an opportunity to really kind of showcase themselves in AEW. So I think there's just an opportunity cost that comes with this. And if you're AEW, do you want to be, I think there's do you want to be seen as the company that gives new opportunities to unproven talents that get a chance to showcase themselves? Or do you want to be seen as the company that has a lot of ex-WWE talent that lets them kind of do different things than they did in WWE and kind of maybe change their characters a little bit, work with different talent? I'm not saying the latter is bad. I'm not saying that I haven't enjoyed a lot of ex-WWE talent that's been able to come into AEW and do new things. I'm just saying that there is a cost that comes when you allow that to happen a lot. Like we'll talk about Bailey. Like, okay, Bailey is maybe going to become available eventually. And everyone's like, Bailey to WWE or Bailey to AEW. She can reunite with Mercedes, they can work in the women's tag team division. There's all this stuff that can happen. That sounds great if you're a big Bailey fan because she hasn't really been able to do much in WWE lately. She's kind of been phased out of their women's division in a lot of ways. And this is a chance for her to be reunited with Mercedes and get a chance to wrestle outside of WWE, which would be really exciting if you're a Bailey fan. The problem is, and like you could say, like Bailey is better than a lot of women in AEW, even though I think Bailey physically is pretty shot. Apparently, that's a controversial take, despite the fact that she's had multiple knee surgeries and looks like she's running around the ring with razor blades in her boots. But she's physically limited. Even in that capacity, though, she's a veteran. She kind of knows how to work. She certainly knows how to work TV matches. She's better than a lot of the really green, rough, AEW women's talent that's kind of at the bottom of that division. But Bailey has a limited ceiling. We've already seen Bailey on our TV for the last, 12 years. She's already been a star that's kind of peaked in this industry already. If you put her on television and give her a substantial role, and if she comes in, she will have a substantial role. I know people are like, oh, you just kind of have her work with the younger wrestlers and she can be a trainer. And like all that stuff sounds good on paper. But if you're going to be bringing in somebody like her, who's probably going to be pretty expensive, you're going to have her on TV a lot, especially when she first comes in. This isn't like you're bringing in, like, I know someone said, like, oh, like, well, they brought in Madison Rayne to be like a player coach and she barely wrestles and Bailey's got to be a lot better than Madison Rayne. I'm like, yeah, but there Bailey would be making substantial more than Madison Rayne, and there'd be an emphasis on her in the division more than most talents that they currently have. So, like, for instance, I think like you had like this whole woman's Owen Hart tournament, and like they took Maya World and they really did something with her. They pushed her all the way to the finals and let her go toe-to-toe with Mercedes Moné, or someone that had just very, very little exposure prior to that. And I think by all accounts, Maya World did well in how that match kind of unfolded and how it impacted her career in a po very positive way. And you have something where you're like, okay, cool. We've got a young, completely new, completely underexposed pro wrestler that we gave this opportunity to because there was an opportunity to give them to. And if you bring in Bayley, maybe you're not going to have as much time for Maya World. Maybe you're not going to have as much time for the next person that would be after Maya World in terms of a young, underexposed women's wrestling talent. So while, like, yeah, Bayley, just much like the New Day, like Bayley, you can see stuff that she would do in AEW, you can see it being good, but it's going to cost something to give her that TV time. And again, do you want to be the company that's like WWE 2014 nostalgia, or do you want to be the fresh, new, exciting alternative company? And there is a balance there to a degree, but I think AEW is definitely at its best when it's pushing the envelope in new and exciting ways, and we're seeing new, sometimes unconventional talents that never would have got a sniff in WWE, someone like Darby Allin, get to really excel. Not necessarily like, here's some stuff from 14 years ago that you might like. And so I think it's a fine line that I think in certain times throughout AEW's history, they've struggled to hit. They've sometimes been an old man promotion. They've sometimes been relying too much on ex-WWE stars. They've sometimes given too much leeway to people who thought that they were bigger than the company and didn't respect Tony and didn't respect AEW. I'm not saying that I have any reason to believe that Bayley or Sheamus or the New Day would fall into that boat, but it is something that has happened before. We've seen people kind of come in and be like, yeah, this is something that's kind of beneath me, but I'll take the paycheck, whatever. And that has not been good for AEW. It's hurt them a lot in different ways. So it's something to be mindful for, especially as this talent actually does become available going forward. And next up, I wanted to talk about Shane Haste. Pivoting gears to Shane Haste here. GHC World Heavyweight Champion Shane Haste. Really interesting. I'm not a big Noah viewer. I think people know that. I'm not like watching into tuning into Monday Magic on Wrestle Universe every Monday. But I have been following the Shane Haste world title run because I found it really interesting. I think everyone that's a wrestling fan has their own like little, favorite mid-card tag team wrestlers, and you think, always think to yourself, huh, what would have happened if they were given a real main event push? What would have happened if Shelton Benjamin, for example, was given a real main event push and like was working main events every night and winning the world title and having these long 30-minute matches with other good wrestlers? Like, what would his career have been like if he was like that? And I just using Shelton as an example, but there's probably hundreds and hundreds of wrestlers over the years that people have wondered that about. And I think Shane Haste is a perfect example. Throughout his career, Shane Haste has been a very dependable, solid, fundamentally sound wrestler. There were times where him and Mikey Nichols, he's primarily, Shane Haste pretty primarily a tag team wrestler for almost his entire career. There were times with him and Mikey Nichols and TMDK where, among the best tag team wrestling groups in the world. I don't think anyone ever, though, was like, Shane Haste, future main eventer. Shane Haste, sky's the limit with that guy. I don't think anyone was ever really thinking that about him. And it's shocking that he's 40 years old in the year 2026. He has been given that opportunity. He has been made, the world champion in Noah, it's a pretty sizable company, a largish company. It's not the biggest wrestling company in the world, but it's not a small little shindy either. It's a real company with a putting a title with, real legacy. It's a title that Kenta Kobashi held. It's a title that Jun Akiyama held. It's a title that Kiji Muto held. Like, it's a pretty big deal. within the scope of wrestling. And not only did he win the title, but he's getting like an honest to God, thorough main event push. He beat Yoshiiki Inamura in May, and he subsequently has defended the title three different occasions. He's, and he's pinning some of the top guys in Noah. He pinned Kenta. He pinned Tetsuya Endo, who I wouldn't really consider a top guy in Noah, but was an excellent match. And he just pinned Ozawa, last weekend at their big match show in Osaka. And that was a match a lot of people were like, okay, it's kind of fun that Shane Haste has had this run, but Ozawa, let's get the back title back onto Ozawa. He's the future of the company. He's the top star. It's time. Nope, Shane Haste beats Ozawa. So I think this is a really kind of rare opportunity where we've seen like really a career mid-card wrestler who's wrestled all over the world and mid-cards all over the world. Get an opportunity to be like a top main event guy. And I'm not too into the weeds like his drawing record. I assume his drawing isn't that great, relative to maybe like Ozawa or like if they put the title on like Tetsuya Naito, which they might do because Naito's has been next defense. But I think as a performer, he's done a really good job in coming across as a credible main event wrestler, which is actually really impressive and really difficult when your career has been mid-card guy. And he's just this career tag team wrestler that has elevated himself into being a credible main eventer. And to give Noah's credit, they're having him beat guys. They're having him like overcome the odds, like in his match against Ozawa when, all of the Team 2000X guys ran in to help Ozawa. And like Shane Haas and his group like kind of helped fight them off, and he beats guys with his finisher. I love his finisher, the kind of weird like looks like kind of like an F5, but then it turns into like a really dramatic side slam. It's pretty cool. It's one of my favorite finishers in wrestling. He's got, he's pinning these guys with his finisher, and he's beating these top guys, and he's having no nonsense. I mean, there is some nonsense, like in the 2000X match, but he's meat and potatoes, getting out there. He's in great physical shape. He looks the part, and he just wants to go out there, and he's having these, kind of classic style, puro heavyweight main events. The stuff you kind of expect when you turn on some pro wrestling Noah, right? You could see him. It's kind of it's crazy to think about this. You could see him wrestling Kenta Kobashi in 2004 and it being a good match. Like you can see like yeah, he if 2004 Kenta Kobashi came into 2006 Noah, 2026 Noah and wrestled Shane Haas, you'd be like this probably match probably going to rule. So it's a huge credit to him. And we were talking about this in the Voice of Wrestling Discord a couple of days ago. We were talking about like, most improved wrestler. And who's going to win Most Improved Wrestler in the Observer Awards this year? And I think Haas is a really interesting case because I think usually when you think of this award, you think of somebody who fundamentally improved at pro wrestling, somebody who's only a few years of experience, who, took a huge step forward and went from maybe wrestling 4-minute matches to wrestling a bunch of 12-minute matches and getting better at, some of the fundamental aspects of wrestling. I think they got better at selling, their moves were crisper. They got more confidence on the microphone, all that kind of stuff. You don't really think about a career veteran like Shane Haas, who, in his regard, like, is he a fundamentally better wrestler now, than he was last year? Like, probably not. He's super experienced. He has always been very good fundamentally. I don't think anyone's surprised that he is a good, like, in bell-to-bell pro wrestler. So did he, but he, what he did improve on was his presentation, the way he carried himself, the way he's gone into singles matches without never really having that experience before, like these big singles matches and coming across as a credible champion, leading his group, the White Raven Squad. Like he has improved in these other, nuanced aspects of pro wrestling that I think a lot of people, if presented with a similar situation, would struggle to do. I think about a guy like Dolph Ziggler, who was, a mid-card guy for a large portion of his career, and that fans respected for being very technically sound and working hard and things like that, and finally got pushed as a main eventer, and it just didn't click all the way. Now, a lot of that has to do with terrible booking, but he didn't take the steps necessary to carry himself like a super duper star. Not saying that Shane Haste is like suddenly like 1985 Hulk Hogan in the ring, with his crowd connection, but he's done a really nice job doing something that I think is really difficult for a pro wrestler to do, especially someone that just spent their entire career. Like, I feel like maybe he didn't, because wrestlers, you have to have confidence in yourself to do this job at a high level. But do I think, like, a few years ago, especially when he was Slapjack in WWE, he was probably thinking to himself, like, man, I'm probably never going to be like a real world champion. I'm probably never going to get like a huge main event push in any sizable company. That's probably never going to happen for me, which is fine. He's even without this run, he's had a very respectable, strong career, just not, getting that chance to be a main event guy. And I think every wrestler who starts in wrestling at some point thinks about them being a world champion somewhere and being a main eventer. It doesn't work out for most guys. And I think even a guy as talented and as successful as Haas had been, he was probably thinking, yeah, this is probably the end of the line for me in terms of I probably already hit my ceiling. And lo and behold, weird things happen in pro wrestling, and he's had a really nice run. And I think he's a great candidate for most improved. And I just want to give him a shout out because, like I said, I'm not a regular Noel viewer. I try to tune in for like maybe some of the big stuff, but I've been hearing about his title run, and I was like, let me watch these matches. They're all on Wrestle Universe, and Wrestle Universe is a really nice, easy app to navigate if you want to just parachute into, these major shows, and watch these main events. And all of the matches are really good. I think his match with Tetsuya Endo is really good. That might be in my top 10 matches of the year by the end of the year. I thought that was outstanding. And I think his match with Amuro, the title change, was really good. His match with Kenta was solid. It wasn't as good as the Endo or Inamura matches, but it was still pretty good. And I think his match with Ozawa was good too, even though it had the really annoying, generic, heel group interference spots that I can never see again and be happy. But it'll be interesting to see. He's got a big test in terms of having good matches. He's got a huge test with Tetsuya Naito coming up, because Tetsuya Naito is not having great matches right now. So if he can pull like a 4-star match out of Naito, and a lot of that might be on Naito because Naito will just be over with the audience, and kind of there'll be some momentum for him, so the crowd will be hot, so it might help on that end. But if he can have like a good bell-to-bell performance with Naito, he's not only should he be considered for most improved, but like as far as like down ballot most outstanding wrestler, down ballot Flair with Ez, he's worth your consideration. I just I, and it's pretty remarkable. Like I said, I think this is difficult. I think there's a lot of guys. Just think a guy, think of Jeff Jarrett, right? Nice mid-card wrestler, got pushed in the main event, never took to it well, was always kind of underwhelming. That's like a good example. And these guys just, Kofi Kingston. He had a great, great run into the world title, wins the world title at WrestleMania, kind of an accidental run, super over, never really came across as a credible world champion. And again, a lot has to do with bad booking, but he was, he's a guy that like a lot of people thought could be a world champion, and then he was world champion. And it's like, maybe there was a reason he never held the world title. Shane Haas is, I think, really seizing it. I think that's something that's really difficult to do. I'll talk about moving to New Japan here a little bit, but also a little focus on AEW. I want to talk about Walker Stewart, who obviously appeared. He's doing all the G1 shows right now. He's kind of doing them by himself, and I'm sure Chris Charlton will join when we get to the Tokyo shows and for the finals and things like that. But he's kind of doing the G1 shows with. A revolving door of kind of whatever English speaking talent they have available. Sometimes I've seen it's been Oscar, it's been I think Calvin Newman's done some shows, it's been Hanare I saw do a show. It's kind of like just working with a bunch of wrestlers who I would say have various capacities and experience doing broadcasting and color commentary. But I think Walker Stewart's the best play-by-play guy in the game right now. I think he was the best guy last year too. He's like the best broadcasting prospect ever. Has there ever been a broadcaster this young, this good, working major wrestling? I think you'd have to go back to the territory days for when Jim Ross was just starting out. And I can't say I've heard a ton of young Jim Ross, working for Bill Watts, but this guy's incredible at his job. And it just seems like. And credit to New Japan for finding this guy. I don't know how they did it. It must have been they found working some indies in the US. But obviously, when Kevin Kelly left to go work for AEW, it's like, All right, English commentaries, been an important part of this company. Who are they going to find to replace him? And they found this guy who basically nobody had ever heard of before and was totally unproven, and they've been flying him to Japan and he's been great. So credit to them for their scouting department and things like that. And it does mean it seems like a matter of if, not when, he ends up working for AEW. I guess he could also work with WWE. I don't know what his dream is. His dream might be to work for WWE. Something interesting I think might hold him back in WWE is now, granted, Vince isn't there anymore. So if Vince was there, he would have no chance of working in WWE for the reason that, like, Walker Stewart is like NFL left tackle sized. He's a big, big man. And Vince McMahon would have hated to have a huge announcer standing next to any wrestler, unless they're like, a huge wrestler themselves. But if you were to have like Walker Stewart next to Cody Rhodes, it would make Cody Rhodes look small because Walker Stewart just happens to be a very large individual. So I always thought like that will hold him back from working in WWE because they won't like that. Now things change. Obviously Vince isn't around anymore, so that's probably if Walker Stewart's dream is WWE, the dream is still alive. But it seems likely he would get his first crack in AEW. And, he appeared and did work for on the Forbidden Door show. Obviously, that's, a joint show, and he's a great person to kind of bring in and help explain New Japan guys and things like that. And I think that he, like, if I was AEW, I'd love to have him be the Collision guy. I would have him do Collision with Tony and Nigel McGuinness. I think, as much as I like Shivani, like, I don't think he's good play-by-play guy at this point in his career, especially for AEW, especially for Collision in particular, because Collision tends to be, multi-man matches and just even more than the AEW regular house style. Like, stuff's moving fast. Guys are doing crazy moves. It's tough for Monty to keep up. He's better as a, color commentator, kind of, voice of reason, honest, critic, guy to kind of interact with the heel a little bit. The way his role is on Dynamite, I think so. So you put Walker on Collision with Shivani and Nigel. I think that's a great team, actually. And you can have them, do Dynamite with Excalibur if you want. Have them on pay-per-views. You can do all that kind of stuff like that. I am waiting for the time, the episode of Collision. One day, we're going to turn on Collision, and Walker Stewart's going to be there doing commentary. And it's not going to be like we're not going to it's going to be before we get the announcement that Walker Stewart has signed with AEW. Something is going to happen where like Excalibur can't make the show, Shivani can't make the show, Rick Abani's not available, and Walker Stewart, they're going to say, oh, you know who we can bring in? Walker Stewart. He's going to do a show, and that will be the beginning of the end for Walker Stewart in New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is too bad because I think he's done a great job with New Japan, and I wonder what's going to happen to them at New Japan's English broadcast after Walker Stewart. Can they find the next Walker Stewart? They found one. Could they do it again? But he's really, really great at his job, and I think it's just a matter of if not when, when he's wrestling, he's calling AEW matches. And it's crazy to think about how young he is because, he's in his early 20s. So, like, if you really want to feel old, think about how it's like by the time Walker Stewart is Tony Schiavone's age, it'll be like 2070. So we could easily be in the year 2070 and Walker Stewart is still doing color commentary for pro wrestling. Just think about that. But anyway, that's my show. Like I said, this was kind of like a supplemental show. Got in and out in an hour, which is pretty good. Want to talk about a few hot topics. We'll have some guests coming up later. But I appreciate everyone taking the time to listen, and I'll talk to you again after a while.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.